Well, thank you, Alon, and thank you to those of you who have posted questions. I'm going to start off the Q&A session with the questions posted online. If you continue to think of questions, I encourage you to keep typing them in. And then once we get through all the questions posted online, we'll go ahead and open the phones and see if anybody has any questions over the phone lines. So I'm actually just going to go kind of backwards up since we just finished Alon's presentation while it's still fresh in everybody's minds. I'll just start with the questions directed towards you. The first question is, did you limit the data to those roadways that allow truck movement, so those trucks are expected to take, or did you keep all roadways data?
We used all the roadway data, but for the most part, there isn't limitations on where trucks could go. Though I should say that we weren't really interested for our purposes, we weren't really interested in the route selection as much as the origins and destinations. So we had the stop locations of where the trucks were, so regardless of route, we knew where they had started and finished, so we didn't have to so much worry about the routing. If you do want to do routing, the 15-minute intervals make that somewhat prohibitive, because a truck can, especially on freeways, travel a very long distance over that time frame.
Okay, and could this information be used to model a possible change to direct through trucks to the innermost lane in urban areas?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Could this information be used to model a possible change to direct through trucks to the innermost lane in urban areas? And actually, there's a second question. Would this reduce congestion for all vehicle types?
You could certainly model it, absolutely. I'm not sure that it'd be a desirable thing to do, just in the conflicts between the trucks moving from the outermost to the innermost lanes. Generally, you don't want to have those conflicts and lane changes, especially because of the speed differences. You could certainly model what would happen if you did do it. I'm not sure what it would do. My guess, without having done any analysis on it, would be that, if anything, it would have a worse impact on congestion, because you would be slowing down lanes that otherwise would travel faster. So it might cause slightly more severe congestion than is currently experienced, but that's just my hunch. I haven't actually tried to model that.
Okay, thank you. We'll go on now to some questions for Dale. Have you coupled your data with train freight data to see the flux moving between the two parallel modes?
No, we haven't at this time. The data that we're looking at now, until the legislature allowed us to go statewide, which we will be doing in the future, was within the central Puget Sound. So it was in a very compact metropolitan area where there's not trains competing with trucks in that marketplace. So at this time, just using Puget Sound data, it's a little it would be difficult, if not non-existent, to look at data from trains, because they're running, for the most part, they're all running long hauls out of the Seattle market.
Okay. And the next question for you is, did you consider using the data available through FHWA, such as the velocity data that Crystal described?
Not at this time. We will look at that data as we expand statewide, but once again, this was in a metropolitan area. We were limited by the area that we worked in, and that data, we had looked at it. It just sort of it didn't fit our needs at the time. I think it will fit better on the statewide. But you know, looking at data and getting data from third partners, one of the things that we did, actually Ed did, is went out and we talked to the providers, indicating to them what we were doing and what we were doing. And are trying to accomplish and utilize their data, And those that agreed to do it, of course, we signed agreements with them. We had a contract. We put together a pay schedule for the invoicing process. We also laid out what type of data we were going to get and what type of information we were going to get. There were privacy issues, and that was accomplished by separating the company from the vehicle. So what we were getting was the positioning data, so that we could do speeds and that, but we had absolutely no idea who that truck belonged to or what type of truck it was. In the future, we hope to be able to start getting that type of data so we can actually look at different types of vehicle combination, size, weight, and so forth. All of our vendors that we did agreements with, we had non-disclosures with them that limited what we could do with the data and who we could share the data with. So, for example, when Alon and the PSRC approached us to utilize our data sets, we had to go to each one of our vendors and get their permission in order to share that data. So it wasn't that once you get it, you can give it to everybody. So that's one of the ways that we go back to what Crystal was talking about in the first presentation about those privacy issues and how do people keep their data from being used in ways that they may not be happy with.
Okay, thank you. We'll now move on to some questions for Crystal. In your presentation, can the GPS data be used to produce truck routings?
We've done some initial exploration of just looking at, for instance, taking a city and looking at truck flows from a particular city over a period of time, like looking at, you know, picking Dallas, for instance, and seeing after 24 hours or after 8 hours where the trucks that originate in a particular area flow. So from that perspective, we've done some proof of concept, but we haven't done any widespread analysis of looking at a truck flows and network utilization. But I think it could be done, but the caution would be that the GPS data set is a subset of population, so how representative it would be of all type, like there may be some underrepresentation of certain types of movement, like local deliveries and service vehicles and that type of thing. It is largely, the nationwide data set that I describe is largely a Class 8 vehicles that are typically longer haul truck movements as opposed to localized movement.
Okay, the next question for you is, actually just lost it, hold on. Regarding a thought of providing financial reimbursements to the private sector for data, is there a funding source available for this on a state level?
Yeah, I think Dale's model of how they did it in the state of Washington is one model. I personally, unfortunately, do not know of all the, whether or not SPR could be used or what types of state funds could be used, but as Dale described, the Washington state experience was they convinced and showed their legislators how this type of data could better improve the decisions they make on their freight improvement their freight mobility improvement program. So that's one model, but certainly I would think that some of the regular traffic data collection funds that would be available in the state for, you know, whatever they use for their regular traffic data collection should be eligible for this type of data also. That funding could be used to access this type of data also, but I unfortunately am not an authoritative subject matter expert on state funding, but I can certainly take that question and see if I can find a better answer, but my inclination right now would be to say a model like used in Washington State is one model, but certainly I would speculate that any funds that are currently used for traffic data collection could be used to support this type of data collection.
Okay. Crystal, I believe this next question was for you as well. Does this effort include freight modes other than trucks, such as rail, domestic water, or commerce? Discuss the needs and or existence of comparable data for all modes in order to make national freight, multi, or intermodal decisions.
Yeah. I would, the initiative that I described was started originally as a highway performance measurement initiative, so we did not endeavor in our initiative to collect data for all modes. I will add to that that Dale talked about the National Cooperative Research Program. There is a National Cooperative Research effort that is concluding or nearing conclusion on a more holistic approach or a more holistic framework for multimodal freight performance measurement, but the work that FHWA has done to date has focused primarily on highway truck movement. So we don't have a comparable data source, but the concept of travel time and travel time reliability are measures that are used by the freight rail industry, as well as, you know, on-time delivery and travel time reliability for all modes is a prominent measure of system performance, but our data collection effort has only focused on highways.
Okay. Another question for you, how do we get the velocity model data for Wyoming, or I guess for anyone from any state who's interested?
So I put up there the web link. It is freightperformance.org, and you could go in and request as a state DOT or an MPO, you could request a user ID and password, and that tool for right now for Wyoming, for instance, it would have data on I-25, I-80, and I-90, because it is only the 25 interstates that have been part of our routine data collection, and it only is historical data, and it's right now available only for 2009. But that website will give, as a matter of fact, I just pulled up a query for Wyoming. So we have I-25, I-80, and I-90. So that data would be available for the entire year 2000 for those three interstates in Wyoming. I can't think if there's another one, but I know 25, 80, and 90, right? I think those are Wyoming.
Okay.
But similarly, you know, the 25 interstates are, any state can request access to the data.
Okay, so, and that's, that web address is up there again, it's freightperformancemeasures.org for anyone who is interested. Okay, this next question, I guess I'll put it out to all the presenters. Did anyone look at rural areas and speed data? Is truck speed less than smaller vehicles in rural areas on interstates or arterials?
Well, the network file that we use for the nationwide effort for the 25 interstates does not have anything on our network file, which is also available on that web link that you just put up. It does not differentiate between what part of the interstate is rural and what part is urban, but the entire length of the interstate is available. So, you know, you would have to, you know, assign a rural or urban designation, but it's limited to just certain parts of the interstate. It is for the entire interstate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there is some, the data that we have, like I mentioned earlier, excuse me, Dale, is largely Class 8 vehicles, so you wouldn't be able to differentiate between smaller trucks versus larger trucks.
And
not in the data set we have.
And in our study, we were looking at the Central Puget Sound is mostly a metropolitan area, and so there wasn't really a lot of rural movements to look at in the Central Puget Sound study. As we expand this across the state, that we will have the ability to look at rural segments versus urban segments and get a better idea on speeds and movements in those areas.
This is Alon. That'd be great to see when that happens, but I would suspect that trucks still in rural areas would still travel slower than cars just because of their operations. So climbing up hills, a car would still be able to take it faster than a large truck, and similarly the deceleration issues. So they should, the gap should be smaller because there would be less merging issues and less people coming on and off different facilities, but I would expect that you would still see some sort of a difference between trucks and cars.
Okay, and the next question is for all presenters again. Do any of the presenters have a feel for how many MPOs are collecting speed data in addition to volume data and household survey data?
I think I could take that. I don't think very many, to the best of my knowledge. I think there's about a handful that have explicitly considered this in terms of their modeling framework and for their own performance measurement products, and there's probably about a handful more that have the data or gather it from somewhere, but I don't think too many more than, say, a dozen are actually collecting speed data.
Okay. Do any other presenters have any thoughts?
No, I agree with Alon. I have not really heard of a lot of the NPOs doing this type of speed collection.
Okay.
I have not either, but what one of the things I have heard from NPOs when we present, particularly when we focus our data presentation on the interstate aspect of our initiative, is some feedback that I've gotten from NPOs is that, you know, that's not going to be enough for an NPO to make transportation decision, or, you know, maybe even do sufficient modeling, because their portfolio includes many more facilities than just the interstate. So that's one of the things that we've incorporated and attempted to address that concern, build our data set to be beyond an interstate data collection tool, and we had data for off-interstate routes, is because, you know, just having data on the interstates while they carry most of the freight is not enough to build into, you know, the NPO planning process. Not enough data. You have to have data for all of the facilities in an NPO region, not just the interstate. So that doesn't necessarily answer the question of are they collecting it, but I it does say to me that they feel that that's a data need, is to have data on, you know, more facilities other than just the interstates, and they obviously aren't collecting that data, I would guess.
Okay. We'll move on to a question for Dale. How did you determine your zone boundaries, and what were your considerations?
Well, our zone boundaries were sort of limited by what the state legislature told us we could do, which is the central Puget Sound, which is a defined area. So what we did is try to set our long lats, which is how we set that, within a box, but including the counties within the central Puget Sound area, which if you look at a map are Snohomish, King, Pierce, and then across the water parts of Kitsap County. So that's how we set that particular area that we wanted to study. And that was also what we sent to our vendors as to, we wanted data within this. And since everything in GPS moves on long lats, they have the ability to only give us data for vehicles that enter into that box. Once that was determined, the vendors automated the system where they would go back in with a computer program, pull out the data we needed, and send it to us, or at least send it up to the university via file format on a weekly basis.
Second. Add to that, I interpreted that question a little bit differently, so I apologize if this isn't what you meant, but the specific areas that Dale was showing in the map in terms of travel times between locations are the traffic analysis zones for the region, if you were asking about the smaller areas.
Yeah, I guess if you do want to, you know, clarify with the question at all, feel free to type in any clarification. Dale, another question for you. Has there been any integration of the GPS data with C-Vision or Way in Motion data?
No, not at this time, and that's an interesting question. And that's something I'm going to present to Ed McCormick to see if there is a way to combine that data.
Okay. The next question, this one was sent just privately to me, but I'll read it out because it was intended, I think, for everyone. Many permanent classification counters, such as ADRs, Way in Motions, and portable classifiers, such as Tubes, Wavetronics, I don't know if it's TIR, TLs, can get speed by vehicle type data. Might this data supplement the GPS data you've gathered?
Absolutely. That'd be great data to have if you can get your hands on the raw data. So certainly from a speed perspective, if you can get the classification data, the GPS data can work hand in hand with it. It can certainly let you know what sort of subset of all trucks the GPS data represents. You can also get comparisons, you know, and then really look to see, assuming all the classification data is operating well, you can see really how the roadway is performing, and then, you know, get the real-time GPS data to speed trap comparison, and then perhaps be able to use a subset of the GPS data and factor the other locations based on the speed trap. So yeah, absolutely, but you definitely need the raw data from the classification counters to be able to do that with.
Okay, the next question, what does the third-party data cost?
Well, it depends how much you're getting and what you're looking. We were paying for all the vendors that we were getting data from about $10,000 a month for the data that we were collecting. And so, but once again, the amount of data and how that data is sent and, or you know, what you're looking for is going to determine the cost. Along that line, one of the things that we've been hearing, especially from our vendors, is as technology improves, the vendors, as they put new equipment out, that new equipment is actually taking shorter reads. So as Alon said, where you were getting a 15-minute read, they now can, with new data, are saying that, well, we can actually give you 5-minute reads and charge you the same amount of money as we were for the 15, because technology is driving down the cost of going out and pinging that truck on a constant basis.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, I think the data valuation is going to be determined by the situation for which you're trying to get access to the data. I think Dale hit the nail on the head, is that, you know, if you want it more frequently and if you want it, you know, more granular, then there's price points that you'll have to pay for that data. The effort that we're leading here at Federal Highway is still considered research, so my guess is that the valuation from a research perspective is going to be much less than if you went to sort of a long-term relationship where, you know, it's a 10-year arrangement for data access. But folks do the math, we have about 500,000 to 600,000 vehicles nationwide, and we pay probably less than 60 cents per year per vehicle. So that's about what the nation, but again, it is, the valuation is based on a research partnership rather than a more programmatic data program.
And also, I think the thing is, as we've said, to remember that to the third-party vendor, this is a waste product. This is, you know, they're getting paid up front by their customer to monitor the truck and collect the data. This is the backstream of that business transaction that they're holding in storage, in the event the customer may need it down the road.
So basically, you're creating a. Not only are you not creating a cost center for them, you're creating a profit center. So
correct.
I think that's the key storyline. As long as it doesn't burden them or cost them, that's gonna be really the driving factor for how the arrangement is negotiated and the price. And I think that the National Cooperative Research Program research project that Dale's leading, that guidebook will talk about some of those data valuation issues, and certainly the compendium that I described that FHWA will be releasing hopefully by the end of this month, early next month, will also talk about the cost of the arrangements and some of the processes by which those arrangements were made. I think there'll be at least 31 different data arrangements, not only here in the U.S., but some of the Canadian efforts that are going on, because they so I mentioned, you know, the sort of the peer pressure thing, that we're not the only ones doing it. They're doing it in Canada, they're doing it in Europe, so the compendium will have not only the experience here in the U.S., but some experiences from at least Canada, so.
Okay. And the final question I see typed in, did the desire to have aggregated data versus point data from your vendors do well in calming proprietary concerns?
Yes, because once again, as I said, the vendor's ability to separate their customer information from the data that they sent to us took care of some of those privacy issues that are out there, especially within the carrier ranks.
Okay, and actually one more question about the privacy issues. Are there privacy issues with certain vendors selling telemetry without the fleet's knowledge or okay?
That would be, from my standpoint, best directed to the vendor. We told them what our needs are, what we were doing with it, and how we are going to handle it, and that was a decision that the vendor made. Now, whether there's something in their contract to that effect that allows them to utilize the data with other parties under certain, I really have no idea on that. I know there are some carriers in some other studies that have raised issues about their data being used, but it relates back to what Crystal had in her presentation, that it would be used in as a punishment means. So I think a lot of it also has to do with who is getting the data and what they're using it for.
I mean, I'll add to that, you know, I think that Dale is, once again, correct, that certainly, you know, we don't necessarily go out and tell, you know, every fleet that a particular vendor has that, you know, your data is included, because what we've done is we've worked with the lawyers of those companies and the lawyers for our contractor, and I will assure you that whatever we're paying them is not going to be enough for them to not consider the privacy issues of their subscribers. So from that perspective, I think that they've negotiated agreements based on the best interests of their customers, that there is absolutely no way they're going to sacrifice or jeopardize the relationships they have with their fleets for the small profit they may gain from participating in such an initiative. So to that degree, I think that definitely from the federal level, from the initiative that we're leading, there were plenty of lawyers involved, and any privacy issues were addressed. But again, I think it is a case-by-case basis, and certainly, you know, it's been around for at least 6 years using that model. So I'm not going to ever say there's not going to be that issue where if you know, there's, you know, non-attainment areas set up or truck restrictions put on, you know, certain routes because of this data, that may cause them to say, hey, I don't want to play anymore. And the non-disclosure agreements, at least in the case of the federal effort, are written in such a way that, you know, we understand that they could say tomorrow, I don't want to participate anymore, and that's a risk that you manage, but it's not something that we've had any issues with, and we've had plenty of outreach to the carrier fleets that are participating, but again, we can't point to any particular one to say, yes, you are absolutely included. They know whether they're included, but I think the storyline and the benefits that they think can be derived out of having objective, better data far outweigh any concerns that they may have lingering with regard to privacy, because the technology vendors have negotiated agreements that are in their best interest.
Okay, well, I think we're about at the end now, and actually we've addressed all the questions that have been typed in, so I think we're going to close out for today, but I want to thank our three presenters, Crystal, Dale, and Alon. I think there was a lot of great information shared today. Thank you also everybody in attendance. The recorded version of today's seminar, as well as the presentations and a transcript, will all be posted online to the Talking Freight website within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email once everything is up there. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today's webinar, please make sure you were signed in either with your first and last name, or if you weren't signed in or didn't have your full name typed in there, please type it into the chat box. Please also download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. One other thing I'm actually going to do right now is bring up a poll before you sign off today. We just want to kind of get an idea of how many people are in the room with you if you're participating in a group setting. So if you could just, before you sign off, fill in this poll, that would be very helpful to give us a better idea of attendance. The next seminar will be held on May 19th and will be about data for state and local freight planning, and I encourage you to register for that seminar through the Talking Freight website. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't done so already, and all future Talking Freights are announced through the listserv. So with that, we're going to close out. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.